Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Gardening is not only the most popular hobby in the U.S., the act of gardening nourishes our bodies through what we harvest and soothes our mind in the process. And new research shows that younger and younger people, Gen Z and millennials in large numbers, are taking up the tools of the pastime. The trowels, the clippers, the shovels, the planting the seeds themselves. Gardening is more important than ever, too, because understanding the process will help us adapt as climate change ushers in new and different challenges. Ohio's garden sage, Deb Kanapke, author, teacher, lecturer, and blogger about all things gardening, is back one final time. We'll post a link to her website at WOSU.org/allsides. Deb Kanapke, welcome back to All Sides. This may not be your last time, but it's your last time with me.
Yeah, well, and I did put a post up on Facebook and I said bittersweet. And also, I wondered what you were going to do next.
How about nutting?
Nutting?
Nutting for a while. Just nutting.
How about some gardening?
I've got to do some gardening before I take off. And I got to get some things in the ground that I've purchased. And I've also must weep over my hostas that the deer are already decimating.
They're hungry this year.
This is bad, though,
yeah,
Deb.
There are so many fawns out there.
Yes.
We didn't get a fawn born in our yard this
year.
It's
like the fawn boomer generation or something.
Yeah, and I think the deer are really learning how to adapt to us. They have figured us out. We're in trouble.
Yeah. Those are not gardens. Those are salad bars.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I've always said that about my garden. And I took some begonias out, and overnight they found the begonias. I was going to spray them the next day because I didn't have the time. And all the leaves are eaten off, so I have little sticks standing up. It's great.
Yeah. That's my tomato plants right now.
Oh, no.
I know. I think they might still grow.
Yeah.
But
we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
Maybe I have some extra for you.
Jeez. Maybe I will. Hey, peak gardening mode right now, right?
Oh, it really is. And I'm in and out of town over the next 2 months. And I'm just thinking, okay, how can I make this sustainable? How can I make these plants resilient while I'm not here?
Mm-hmm.
I'll be concentrating on keeping in touch with my daughter and saying, did you water the XYZ?
But we're in kind of a period of not a lot of rain right now. And I'm trying to resist the urge to water, 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 water too much.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not going to be around.
As always, what you want to do is the deep water. One to three times a week, depending on our weather. And I say that, I can't give a specific formula. Our weather is so wonky.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of any other term, but we get these cool evenings, which are great because our plants can recover. But then we get these hot days and then the wind kicks in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm letting the plants tell me what they need. And each time before I leave town, I do a deep water. I water until I see it's slowing down, going down into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Then I come back and I do the rounds one more time. So I deep water twice. And that seems to have worked for me. But doing the old, and everyone knows I've said this before, doing the old whoosh, whoosh over the top mm-hmm. of your plants actually causes them more harm.
What about a sprinkler?
In the past, when I first started gardening, I used a sprinkler.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realized there was all this water going in areas that I didn't want it to.
Hmm.
I didn't want to water my lawn. And so then I started experimenting with the sprinklers where you could really narrow mm-hmm. where it was sprinkling. And that kind of worked well. But sometimes I can be absent-minded unless I put a timer on. My sprinkler's on for,
I've
you know,
done that before.
like 6-7 hours, and it's like, oh, shoot.
Water? Water?
Yeah,
it's free.
I know. And we are on a well and a septic tank. And so for me, I don't have what seems to be an endless supply. I mean, I do. I have a lot of water.
Yeah, we're here, so.
We're here, and Ohio is incredibly fortunate with our water. But I'm more conscious that I am taking water right out from under me, and I need to be responsible for that and also allow that water to get back down if it's going to. So I only use water in my containers some sensitive plants and newly planted plants in my veggie garden, of course. But I'm very stingy with my water, and my garden is tough love. After 2 years, if somebody is too hungry for water or just can't hunker in down into the garden, well, sorry, I can find something else that works better. And that's, to me, is sustainability, not only for myself, because that means I'm not looking at that plant all the time thinking, how am I going to get you through this? But it's also sustainability in the garden. This plant fits here.
Right. I've got pockets like that where it's obvious things are working and they fit. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest this hour is Deb Kanapke, known as Ohio's Garden Sage. She's an author, teacher, lecturer, and blogger on all things gardening. And you've been coming on the show for...
I think it's 12 like or 13
years. Yeah.
13. I have all
13.
My notes.
Oh, jeez.
I have all my notes that I've taken. I have all of the responses I've put on Facebook.
Right.
I keep all that because, well, being a teacher at Columbus State, you had to keep all your records in case some student came back and contested. And it's just a good practice. So I still have those too, folks. So students, I still have all your records. Thank goodness for her.
Yeah,
for
she's
computers.
Always taking notes, and she didn't bring in a ton of books.
I did. I didn't know what we were going to talk about. I gave you so many
she's
options.
She's got like 4 or 5 books. That's really nothing, folks.
Yeah.
If you have a question or comment for Deb, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I wondered what you make of the trend, a seeming trend, that younger and younger people are getting into gardening.
I think it's fantastic. I think it is a reflection of them being more aware of their surroundings. Climate change is not a good thing, but one of the good outcomes of it is that we are becoming more aware of our surroundings. We are becoming more aware of the practices we've done in the past that have not been good. We talk about regenerating soil. We talk about air pollution, water pollution. So much of Ohio's soil is in the Gulf of Mexico because of wind and water erosion. Our children and our children's children are so much more aware of the environment than many of us have been. And I'm saying that as a broad generalization because there are some of us who have always been aware. And someone said to me yesterday, I was in the garden at the Heritage Garden. We had over 500 people come through from a conference to tour the garden. And one of the gardeners said, until I started gardening, I really wasn't aware of how it all worked, nature worked. I wasn't aware of what we had done in the past, and I became woke. And he said, I know that's an overused term, but I have awakened to the environment, to the natural world. And he's older, but not as maybe my age, but he came to it really late all of a sudden. And he said, you know, I've changed how I do my lawn. And I said, thank you. And so we are in the time of change. The younger ones are looking at us older ones and saying, well, we're waiting for you to change.
You know what I think about him saying he changed how he does his lawn, how he takes care of his lawn. And the thing is, sometimes when we think about the environment and we think, what difference is it going to make if I recycle my cans and bottles and whatnot? Mm-hmm. Really, what difference does it make? But when you're talking about gardening, it does make an immediate difference on the whole ecosystem because ecosystems can be any kind of size.
Right.
And you can make a difference with one garden.
You can. And I, you know, in all the notes I sent, I headed it as gardens and gardening as agents of change.
It's not just theoretical or gigantic. It can be at a very small, impactful level.
A container garden where you're growing a tomato and you're eating the food you grew. A little 10 by 10 garden where you're putting in plants for the bees and other pollinators, butterflies, bringing in the hummingbirds. Maybe it's a 20 by 20 place where you have a bench and it's your meditation, your stress-free place. Gardens make a huge difference no matter what size they are. And it is also a way that we can make change, that we can help the environment. We can regenerate or heal the soil. We can just look beyond ourselves, realize that we are a part of nature instead of apart from it. It is my base message. It is something I live for. You know, and it's, I started thinking, what were some of the things I wanted to say today? And I put them on that sheet of paper. With our last time together here, what are some of the things that have been the common threads that you and I have talked about all these years?
And my hydrangeas.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, but sustainability.
me.
Yes, that's right. But hydrangeas too, they're important. You know, all of these plants are important because they sequester carbon, mm-hmm. and they're a part of life.
Sometimes people call in and they have pose a question to you and you have to tell them, you know, it's just not meant to be there.
Mm-hmm. Like,
we can't control everything.
But we try because we think we can. And I used to think that when I started gardening in earnest at our first house, by golly, I was going to have the perfect vegetable garden mm-hmm. and this and that. And previous owner had put barberries. And I looked at them and thought, I hate this plant. You know? And, you know, I'm going to control this plant. And of course, it bit back.
Uh-huh.
So, but we do. We think of our efforts as control. And I'm trying to really back away from that. Although parts of my garden have gone crazy. And I'm thinking, how can I understand this craziness and change it into what I want, but yet understand what I've done to cause this craziness.
I wanted to talk about soil, and you know, you talk mm-hmm. about regenerating soil, that which is a relatively new conversation that we're having, and mm-hmm. I've talked about it with other people too, because it's more than just fertilizing it.
Right.
It's much more than that. But right now, everyone in my neighborhood is mulching, except us, because we're cheap. And I'm just wondering about, I'm still moving leaves out of the way from covering everything mm-hmm. with the leaves over the fall and winter. I'm still working on that. Pretty much done with it. But what's the alternatives to mulch? Do we have to mulch?
It depends on what kind of mulch you're using.
I'm waiting. I'm scared.
I know. So, first of all, on the leaves, the only places I've moved my leaves out have been my rock gardens. But everywhere else in all my other beds, the leaves are still there. I don't move my leaves out of my gardens. I blow them in the winter, or they fall from the trees that okay. are over them. But my exceptions are the rock garden plants. Okay. Otherwise, they would rot.
Because they wouldn't get any sunlight or air.
Sunlight, yeah. And they're these little buns and little things, and they get covered and... So mulch is anything from green growing mulch of plants, you know, cover the ground. That's
right.
What Dr. Lal says at Ohio State University.
That's what
University.
You want me to do with my daffodil leaves.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
And if you cut your daffodil leaves because you want to make it look neater, then you cut them up and leave them there.
Right. Well, it's not that I want to be given. They're flopping over onto other plants.
And that's when I will cut them up and then, or I will cut them off because uh-huh. they're done. Once they flop, to me, they're done.
Right.
I cut them off at the bottom and I do one or two cuts with my pruners.
Shorten it.
And they're
yeah.
in the garden.
Okay. Okay.
And
I'm going to do that this year.
In 2 weeks, 3 weeks at the most, they're gone.
Right.
If you have healthy soil.
Yeah.
Now, if you don't have healthy soil, it will take longer, but by recycling that nutrition back into the garden, you are making your soil healthier because you're putting back what the plants took out to make those leaves. We call that nutrient recycling, which I think I may have said about 1,000 times on this
maybe,
show.
Maybe. Okay, we're going to take a break. My guest is, of course, Deborah Kanapke, known as Ohio's Garden Sage. She's an author, teacher, lecturer, and blogger on all things gardening. And as you know, I could just sit and talk about my garden all hour with her. I have no problem with that. But I serve my public. I serve my listeners. I'm here for you. Call us if you have a question. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
The Last Ride, a deep dive into a shocking unsolved mystery.
These two young men disappear off the face of the earth, and the last person to see them live was this sheriff's deputy. His stories were so unbelievable.
Listen to The Last Ride podcast, part of the NPR network.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. My guest this hour, Deb Kanapke, known as Ohio's Garden Sage, author, teacher, lecturer, and blogger on all things gardening. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And it's lit up like a Christmas tree, Deb. But first, I wanted to continue our conversation about mulch.
And I'll make
and
it
then
fast.
We'll get some calls. Yeah, you got some stuff you want to talk about mulch.
So that's the green growing mulch. Plants are the best mulch you can put on top. If you have open spaces, yes, you can use other mulches, mushroom compost, hardwood, softwood, whatever. Just understand the characteristics of each mulch you use. Do not spread it more. Do not put it more than 1 to 2 inches thick. For weed control, 2 inches is better. Do not put it up against any plant. There should be space. Exceptions are in my rock garden. The stones are underneath my plants to keep them dry. So understand why you're using the mulch. Don't put it down too early. Don't put it in March. Wait until the soil warms up, then spread your mulch in the spring. In the winter, wait till your soil cools off, then spread your mulch in the winter, if that is what you're doing. Doing it too early doing it too early means that you are trapping the wrong temperature in the soil for the plants. So as Ann said, there are questions, so I'm going to leave it at that. There may be mulch questions. We'll see.
Let's see. I'm going to start with Jane in Columbus. You're on the air. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Ann. I just want to begin by thanking you for all you have contributed to our community through the work you do. And
you.
Happy retirement.
Thank you.
You're just a treasure. So I actually just retired, and I'm hearing you talk about how young people are getting into gardening. And, you know, I live in an apartment, so I'm able to plant in the entryway around my entry door and in containers. And, you know, I've been kind of a lazy gardener, but I've been out there this spring and realizing I like this. I really like this. And there's part of me that's saying, okay, I need to go off and sign up for a master gardener class.
Oh, good.
And just, you know, and I may get to that point, but I've also promised myself I'm not going to make any big commitments right off the bat. So my question is, What's the middle path?
Okay.
What's a moderate thing to do to get going? And obviously, reading your blog, Deb, is one of the first things I'll do.
Even though I have to say our blog is in pretty much retirement, we're going to archive it. I know, but I'm going to give you an option. I teach at the Columbus Garden School, and there are all kinds of classes there. So you can take one class and dip your toe in the water to see, you know, there are all kinds of titles, read the descriptions and see if there's something there that you want to spend 1 or 2 hours of your life on learning about, and then how far you want to go with it. And don't mean to advertise, except this sort of is, I'm doing my permaculture class in June. And it's Zoom, so you can sit in the comfort of your own home, drink a cup of tea, and or a glass of wine, whatever you wish,
whatever.
Preferred beverage, and learn about gardening, different aspects. We have a lot of different teachers teaching a lot of different things, beekeeping, construction, you name it. So that's a way to kind of dip your toe in. Also, you might look at Columbus State Community College's catalog and see if there's a course that calls to you. But also I know Franklin Park has courses. So there are courses around where you don't have to spend a ton of time, and you can see how much you like it. And if you do like it, then do look into the Master Gardeners course, which not only is it a fantastic course, but you meet a lot of like-minded people who are out there who want to make gardens.
I hope that helped, Jane. Happy retirement. I'll be joining you in about 48 hours. So thanks a lot. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And Jim and Powell has my, you know, annual question. Jim, you're on the air. Welcome.
Okay, annual question.
Terrific. Hello, ladies. Thank you so much. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yep.
Terrific. So, number one, actually, I apologize. I've got a couple questions that would be very brief. I'm curious to hear more about the deep watering. I am one of those persons who does, you know, 5 minutes in the morning and 5 minutes at night and do it every day. So I'm going to switch my cycle. But before we speak about that, my wife and I have 4.5 acres wooded. And over our 20 plus years here, we've learned what works in that environment, what does not. So, you know, obviously hostas are a salad bar, but right now we've got a lot of heliobores, ligularia, Solomon seal, ferns, sedge, and of course daffodils. But I'm just curious, in terms of shade, deer-resistant shade gardening, are there other plants, perennials or annuals, that you think would do well?
Okay, so first question. Please don't take offense at this, but you are doing whoosh, whoosh watering, which is, you know, putting it over the tops and hoping it gets down. What you want to encourage is deep rooting, and you can only do that by deep watering and then letting the roots go down to that water that's deep instead of keeping the roots up at the surface of the soil. Because what that does, when it gets hot outside, then that top 2 to 3 or 4 inches of soil bakes, and so do your roots. So look at 1 to 3 times a week, depending on the weather, like this. Now, in my pots, I have plants in pots. I'm watering those every day in little pots because I haven't planted them yet, my herbs and vegetables. But once they're in the ground, I water once or twice a week, or 3 times if we go into the deep drought time in July and August. And I sit there with my watering wand, and I watch that water go into the soil. And when it starts to slow, and you'll see this.
It'll set.
And that's when you go to the next plant. It doesn't take very long. And if it doesn't take very long at all, you didn't need to water.
Hmm. Okay.
So that's the watering. Now, other deer-resistant plants. You've covered the good ones, sedges, ferns, hellebores, etc. Also take a look at some of our other natives. Unfortunately, deer love trillium, but one they don't love is golden seal. It is a lovely plant that spreads out. Another one is our near native Pachysandra, Allegheny spurge, or Pachysandra procumbens. It is, I think, so much prettier than the Japanese Pachysandra.
Is the Japanese Pachysandra what we're familiar with seeing?
One you see. That's Pachysandra terminalis from Japan.
What's the Pachysandra?
Pachysandra procumbens, or Allegheny spurge, which was one of Thomas Jefferson's favorite plants.
Oh, okay.
And it is mostly evergreen, has a great flower, pollinated by early pollinators, superb, deer-resistant. Also, there are arums, jack-in-the-pulpits. Those, deer don't like those, not usually.
My jack-in-the-pulpits, which I have, thanks to you, I've got 2 now. You originally gave me 1, but they're kind of slow.
Well, I need to give you more then.
Okay.
I have lots of
slow
seedlings. Yeah.
Okay.
From a seedling.
They're just so cute.
Yeah, from a seedling, it takes anywhere from 4 to 7 years to bloom.
Yeah.
So I guess I need to give you bigger ones.
Yeah.
So I hope that gives you some ideas, Jim, and have fun.
Did he mention a stilbe?
He did not mention a stilbe.
How do you feel about a stilbe?
I love a stilbe, but they're water hogs.
Oh, they are water hogs, and deer don't like them, though.
They don't usually like them, but the one that is not a water hog is the Chinese stilbe, Stilbe chinensis. It's the low one, and it runs.
Oh.
It's really good at establishing it itself and not needing as much water as the big, beautiful Aarons. Stilbe, the ones that get 2 to 4 feet tall.
Yeah, and are gorgeous.
That are gorgeous, yeah.
Jim and Powell, thank you for that call. I'm trying to go in order here, and that would be Dan in Columbus. Hi, Dan, you're on the air.
Hi, Ann. Hi, Deb.
Hi.
Hey, first, I'm a big fan of yours, and I'm a disciple of Doug Tallamy.
Oh, good.
This year I started my own small landscaping business, just doing native landscaping.
Great.
One of the issues that I run into is evergreen shrubs.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't many natives.
Nope.
And I've done a lot of studying on native cultivars, and I'm aware that a native cultivar doesn't necessarily serve wildlife in the same way an actual native plant does.
It depends.
So are there juniper cultivars or other evergreen cultivars that would serve the same purpose?
So for the junipers, our native is Juniperus virginiana, the red cedar, eastern red cedar, eastern juniper, etc. So for that one, there are many cultivars, and what you're looking for is one that has the fruit, because that's what the birds eat. It's also what makes gin. So yeah, it's twofold. So you look at those cultivars and looking at most of them have fruit. You don't want a sterile one. I don't know that there is one. We do have a Taxus canadensis, that is native, but it is difficult to find in the industry, and I don't believe there are a lot of cultivars of it. We also have a pine, you know, our eastern pine, Pinus strobus. We have hemlock canadensis. And there are cultivars of that, especially cute little dwarf ones, but you're looking mostly at the straight species in the industry. Also our arborvitaes, Thuja occidentalis. There are many cultivars of that plant, and a lot of those plants are used for shelter of our birds and food source in some cases, and also for nest building. So we actually have quite a few natives. I forgot our native spruce, Picea glauca, which is the white spruce.
How could we forget Picea glauca?
I know. So we actually have quite a few, and I would encourage you to look at some of the southern species that I call near natives, because as we get warmer, we're going to need to look at adaptability and resilience for all of our plants, for warmer. So I hope that gives you a head start. And good luck with your company.
Yeah, good luck, Dan. That sounds great. You know, arborvitae that we removed because it got diseased.
Yeah.
And then we put in cherry laurel. Not happy.
No.
I'm so bummed out.
That's
Can we go back to arborvitae? Or because it was
How
diseased
How many years
once?
Has it been?
It's probably been like 4 years.
You can try. Okay. I would put one in.
Okay.
And check, just kind of see.
Yeah.
It would depend on which disease it was. I don't remember what it was.
That brown stuff where it started browning up on the inside?
Well, it browns up normally on the inside, but
okay.
Yours browned up a lot.
Yeah, all of a sudden it's like, oh, that's normal. No, it's not normal.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Let's see. Matt in Grandview, you're on the air. Hi, Matt.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
And congrats on your retirement. That's great.
Thank you, Dan. I'm Matt. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Can you hear me all right?
Yep,
yes,
I'm good.
We can.
Yep.
Oh, perfect. Great. Yeah, my question for your guest, I had a couple, but take both or just one if you can. My first one is that, you know, I'm a renter. I live in a, you know, fairly urban environment near downtown here. Does your guest have any advice for people who want to really maximize their gardening potential? I heard her talk about container gardens and that sort of thing. So any advice on that would be really helpful. And my second question is, I was really keen on this conversation about sustainability, and I'm hearing more and more about like biodynamic farming and biodynamic gardening. And I realize that's a step up from organic, but I'm trying to figure out what that actually entails and what that means basically. So yeah, those are my questions, and thanks again for taking my call.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you. So for I don't know. I hope you have a balcony, because if you have a balcony, you can do container gardening. I have friends who have apartments and they have containers on their balcony. If not, see if there is some land around the apartment building that you are allowed to cultivate. And whether it is food or herbs or ornamental plants, a cutting garden, pollinator garden, whatever, once you start it, maybe other people might be interested too. So that is a way to get into the gardening aspect. For biodynamic farming, that is Rudolf Steiner. And that is a very, very regimented kind of way to regenerate the soil. Gardening with the seasons, with moon cycles, seasonal cycles, moon, using natural substances into the soil, rock powders, which, like, that's what phosphorus is. And there's a lot to it, more than I can give you in a couple minutes. There are some superb books on biodynamic farming, not so much gardening, but you can take those principles and put them into gardening practice too. And I also encourage you to look at permaculture practices, a lot of good books on permaculture. So your library is one of your best resources. Take a bunch of books out and see which one talks to you, and then go from there.
Thank you, Matt. Thanks for that call. Anybody else want to call? We've got some calls waiting. We'll get to those, but 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest is Deborah Knapke. You know her as Ohio's Garden Sage. She's an author, teacher, lecturer, and blogger on all things gardening. Give us a call if you have a question or comment, and we'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
The Last Ride, a deep dive into a shocking unsolved mystery.
These two young men disappear off the face of the earth, and the last person to see them live was this sheriff's deputy. His stories were so unbelievable.
Listen to the Last Ride podcast, part of the NPR network.
Welcome back to All Sides. My guest today, Deborah Knapke, known as Ohio's Garden Sage. She knows everything about gardening. She knows all of the Latin and the Greek terms, I think. I don't know what. But she knows all the technical terms. And sometimes I make fun of her, but I do it with love. She's been a great friend of All Sides over the years. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, you've mentioned a couple times that, well, you know, the climate's changing, so you want to find something that's adaptable. You want to anticipate the warmer temperatures in what you're buying. So we're changing zones kind of slowly. It's a very in-between time.
It is. And it's funny because that isn't licensed to go and get a zone 10 plant from Florida and hope that it goes over winter.
Don't be ridiculous.
But this past winter, except for those two deep dives, the one in November and one in December, we had essentially zone 7, 8, and 9 winter temperatures overnights. And that's scary. We settled in zone 6 some of the nights, but zone 7 is... wait a minute. No, I've got this.
I don't know the zone.
Zero to 10.
So I forget.
0 to 10 okay. degrees. We went below that those two times where we took the deep dip. But other than that, we stayed up in the upper aughts and teens and then a lot in the 20s. So that's zone 8 and 9.
Mm-hmm.
Scary.
Yeah, it's you can't plan for it.
Mm-mm.
You got a lot of disappointment ahead. Let's see, Jerry in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Jerry.
Oh, hi. Got a question for you. Mm-hmm. 1987, a gardening company put in a hedge in front of our house of cobalt barberry. It's been fine. Now we're ready to sell the house, and the plants have started dying off. About a third of them, leaves just turned brown. We've taken those out. Are the rest of the plants, even if they look healthy, are they doomed? Should we replace them all? What should we put in its place?
You know, that's a really good question. But if I were there and could see it, I might be able to tell you whether you're dealing with a disease issue or if you're dealing with old age of the plants themselves. You know, we tend to think of plants going on forever, but they do have a lifespan. And that's, let's see, that's 13 plus 23. That's 36 years. So they might
in
have
plant years.
In plant years. I don't know what that is, but they may. I don't know the lifespan of barberries. It's not one. I spend more time on lifespan of trees than I do shrubs. But they may have come to their end point. You could try to trim them back. But if you're... if you believe that it will be detrimental to the sale of your house, you might consider taking them out and then letting the next person decide what they want to do. Barberries, by the way, they're not friendly. They bite. They're not my favorite shrub, I have to say.
I'm just looking up extension. So it's some kind of extension service, and it says somewhere around 10 years is probably the upper limit of a lifespan for a shrub.
Yeah, well, then you really got your money's worth.
Yeah, definitely. I guess I should feel better about things. Sometimes I feel like it's funny. You feel like shrubs should last kind of forever, but you don't think that they have a lifespan.
Well, I have some that have. I have lilacs. I have a...
oh, we have a lilac question.
Oh, good.
My lilacs are dying.
I have a lilac that's more than 50 years old.
Wow, man. Jerry, thanks for that call. Becky in Dublin, you're next, and you have a lilac question.
All right,
so there
lilacs.
You go.
Oh, I do. I do. Thank you so much for taking my call, and I wish you the best in retirement. My lilac question is this. My brother, who lives in Stark County, brought me a start from a white lilac bush that my parents put in, along with many others, somewhere in the late 50s, early 60s. Now, all the rest of them have died and were removed, but the shoot from the one he brought me is still alive, quite robust, and blooms regularly. I've had mine 4 years and no blooms at all. So I'm curious what do you recommend?
We're very sad.
Okay. So sometimes, depending on which part of the shrub the shoot was from, some sucker growth won't put out flowers. They won't produce flowers. I don't know the mechanism of that. I'm sure somebody out there does. I have had that. We call that a blind plant. You know, it doesn't bloom. What could you do? Well, maybe you could try root pruning, which is going around the plant like in four spots and just kind of pruning down and getting it to make new roots and seeing if that re-energizes it and maybe switches it into making flowers. Also, maybe it's still in a juvenile stage instead of clicking over into the adult stage, which is when they will bloom and flower. Although I've seen some lilacs bloom really early. This is when I wish I had like Dave Danaher on, you know, push the button and call him, because he would tell me exactly what's going on. But lilacs, my lilacs lately have been having issues, and I am not sure what's going on, but their blooming has been less, and I used to have gorgeous shrubs. So maybe our lilacs have been discussing life and just won't bloom.
It's just not worth it anymore.
Yeah, so you might try that root pruning. You might even... I don't have any other questions.
Okay.
Good. But you know what? I am going to put something on the All Sides Facebook page. I will see if I can find something. I will do that today.
She's crazy when she does
so
this.
So I will do that today, and it may be that I have no answer for you, Becky, but maybe I'll have something.
Okay. Becky, good luck with that. I've got lilacs that we've gotten rid of, all the ones on the west side of our house now because they all died. And on the east side, we had a good one, but now it's obvious that half of that one's dead too.
Mm-hmm. Something's going on with the lilacs, which depresses me because it's, to me,
that best is
spring.
I know.
It's from my childhood.
Another thing that's spring to me are peonies.
Yes.
And my peonies are prolific this year, so prolific that I can't get them to stay up.
Yeah, they've...
How do people stake peonies? I see other people's... They have these long, skinny stalks, and they're just sitting right up. Am I missing something here?
You might be missing the hidden peony hoop.
Oh, they have hoops. Oh, so, I never even knew. So, see, people have tricks. I don't know this.
Oh, gosh, we have tricks. Also, depending on, I have some peonies, and they have been phenomenal this year.
Yeah.
Just phenomenal.
But when they flop over.
And I only one of mine has flopped because it just got so heavy in its bloom. I put it on Facebook, a Red Charm peony. Absolutely gorgeous.
I saw it.
Yes, it was beautiful. but my abalone pearls stayed up. All of my peonies just stayed up beautifully this year. But you can, if you know you have one that's really heavy, what it is a big hoop. Sometimes it's just a big open hoop with legs, and I would recommend getting
like the tomato things?
You can do that too, but these have one hoop and they have legs on them.
That are wider apart. Yeah,
than wider
a tomato
apart.
One. Okay.
Some people like the grid system inside the hoops, and some people like concentric circles. So there's all kinds of peony hoops out there.
But it's too late now.
It's too late now.
Yeah, right.
You had to do that early in the spring.
Okay, let's see. Alan in Clintonville, you're next. Hi, Alan.
Hey, thanks, Ann, for a great 17 years. So good that I've totally forgotten your predecessor, who was really good at his
Fred Anderle. Who could forget Fred Anderle?
I can't.
It's only been 13 and a half years. You know, you're aging me now. So.
Okay. But hey,
thank you,
on
Alan.
Your deer repellent, Menards has a product called Nozone. You put it in the ground, and it sits like 6 inches above the ground every 8 feet around your hostas. And so far this spring, it's been working wonderful for me. And I think it has mothballs in it. But
let's see.
My deer way, which is great because I live just south of Worthington and in a ravined area, and there seems like there's deer all over the place.
Oh, yeah, they're everywhere. They're everywhere. It's a big deer year.
Do they smell like mothballs?
They don't, and it seems to work wonderful.
Does it smell like mothballs?
I haven't smelled it that close.
Okay. All right. Okay. So
I am not familiar with Nozone, but I'm going to be looking it up.
Check it out.
Because I would love that, since they've already eaten my big begonias. And I need to protect them when they put their leaves back up. But I do caution, I don't know what's in them, but if someone's using mothballs, you might consider not using mothballs. They're not good for the soil. They're quite poisonous. They're not good for your health either. I would be surprised if mothballs were being used, but there might be a component of the mix that's in that Nozone that is camphor. Because deer do not like camphor, and that is a big part of mothballs.
Okay.
But, that's an old thing. I remember smelling mothballs in people's gardens. It's an old, I hate using this term, an old wives' tale.
Okay.
But, yeah. Oof,
mothballs are just bad anyway. I mean, I don't like that smell.
It works, though. Moths don't come in.
Right, true. let's see. Lynn in Upper Arlington, you're on the air. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep. Uh-huh.
Wonderful. I was wondering about planting some native plants. I have a sunny area out front, a small area, and I was wondering, Deb, if you had maybe 3 favorite native plants for sun that you'd recommend.
Okay, just 3? All right, so you said a small space, so I'm going to give you smaller plants, but it might be 5. So for spring, I want you to put in our native penstemon. It's called the foxglove beard tongue or penstemon digitalis. For summer, I would love it if you would put in a goldenrod, maybe blue stem goldenrod. Not Canada, not tall, but blue stem goldenrod or there's one called solar cascade. It's the shorts goldenrod. Those are also both those 2 good ones. For the fall, I'd love for you to put in an aster, the New England aster, or the aromatic aster, October Skies, Radon's Beauty. And then, if you can, fit in a butterfly weed or a swamp milkweed for the monarchs. And, oh my gosh, there's just so many plants to talk about. Those are native plants. There's more, and of course, my mind is now blanking because I don't have my lists in front of me. But you can also put your zip code into homegrown. No, I'm sorry. zip code into National Wildlife Federation, and you go to Plants for Your Zone, you put in your zip code, and you get this beautiful list of plants for your region. National Wildlife Federation, and go there, Plants for Your Zone.
Okay, you brought up goldenrod. Mm-hmm. I've got a Canada goldenrod.
Not that one.
All right, is that bad?
It's huge. It's invasive.
Okay, it's now, popped up in my garden.
I can't say invasive.
It popped up in my garden, yes. So I just wondered if I should get rid of it.
It's a native, but it grows rhizomatously, and soon that's all you will have.
No,
you want
okay,
the
I'll
ones
get
that are clumpers.
There. Okay, all right, clumpers. Good to know. I'm glad you reminded me of that. I'm going to squeeze these calls in if I can. Howard in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Howard.
Yes, good morning to you. Mm-hmm. Good early afternoon. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you, is it possible that we're going to see more opportunities for high tube cultivation of foodstuffs here in central Ohio? Years ago, we did have many greenhouses in Licking and in Franklin County. Mm-hmm. I know we have seasonal cultivation for foodstuffs, but we also have an opportunity to dampen the effect, if you will, of having to move produce across the country at great expense and at a significant impact to the general environment.
Yeah.
And though, in fact, the governor has indicated that we have water to draw in opportunities for other kinds of manufacturing.
So, Howard, I'm going to break in here because we don't have a lot of time.
Yeah,
we are doing high tunnel all over the place. Franklinton Farms is doing it. We have urban gardeners all over.
What is high tunnel? I don't get it.
High tunnel is, or low tunnel, high tunnel, low tunnel, and that's what you were referring to. A lot of urban gardeners are using this beautiful tool, which extends our season, and they can actually grow in the winter. So low tunnels are lower, but they're like Quonset huts with plastic over them, and then high tunnel are
trenching
taller.
but
they're like maybe low tunnel, you're going to be bending over. High tunnel, you can stand up.
Okay.
They're doing it up at Stratford Ecological Center. A lot of CSAs are doing it. So, yes, we are doing it. And I truly believe that this type of growing is what's going to really boost our food availability and food justice.
I only have time for one more call. Okay. I'm going to go to Jeff in Columbus. And, Jeff, we're really running out of time, but I wanted to sneak in.
Okay.
Thank you, and I'm going to miss you. I'm relatively new to Columbus, and you're part of what makes Columbus Columbus to me. So, best wishes.
Oh, thank you, Jeff.
For those of us who admire pretty plants and flowers and delicious fruits from the garden, but who are not inclined toward gardening, what can you all recommend when looking for a person or a company to take care of our shrubbery and et cetera?
That's a good question.
That is an excellent question. Basically, looking for someone that you get along with, that you can communicate with, find out what they have done before, what is their experience. You know, it is tough. I will tell you, my industry, landscape industry, we are going nuts right now. We are overextended, hugely overextended. So a big thing is patience on your part, because we're trying to get to everything, and it's difficult because our job takes time.
Mm-hmm.
But you're looking for someone who cares for the earth and who is interested in sustainable and organic practices. You can ask at your local garden centers. You can ask other master gardeners if they know anyone, and some master gardeners are doing this. But it's sort of like asking around your neighbors and who's done the good job, and who communicates, because I'll tell you, I only have one client now because that's all I can handle with everything else that I do.
And it's not me.
No,
everybody.
It's not Anne. but it's finding someone that you can work well with, and good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck, Jeff. That's a great question. Everybody, it's been such so much fun over the years to take all of your calls. And some of you, when you call back and you say, hey, I did what Deb told me to do last year, and this is what happened. We love those. I hope that Deb will continue to be a guest on All Sides after my departure. Thanks for all the kind words, everybody. Deb, thanks for all you've done over the years.
It's
with
been
our
wonderful
membership drives, all of our membership events, everything you've done.
Thank you.
You're a treasure. So thank you so much for sharing your treasure with 89.7 NPR News. That's it for now. One more day tomorrow. So join us. 2 hours of All Sides on a Friday, live. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.